KINY Juneau. Now from the Alaska Airlines Studio, local first news for Juneau and all of Southeast Alaska.
I have a very important topic I really want to discuss with you today, and that's really just about education. Mm-hmm. As I'm sure you are aware, as I'm sure a lot of our listeners are aware, that's been a very touchy subject this last year. And where I kind of want to start with that is very recently, you had a poll done and the results came out of that about what Alaskans really want to happen with education. So I want to start there. Kind of catch me up and let the listeners know kind of where we're at with education.
Well, that's a huge topic, right? And it's an important topic. Obviously, that's why everyone's talking about it, because we all have a stake in education, whether you're a parent or whether you don't have kids or they're out of the system. It still makes a difference. It still matters that we care about education and the outcomes that kids have. So education is multifaceted. It has a lot of components. And one of the main, several main components to education, even here in Alaska, funding. It's very important. It's a public service. It's a public good. We all accept that. And, I'm a product of public schools. My kids are products of public schools. My wife is. And we want to do everything we can to make sure our public schools have what they need to do their jobs. And at the same time, we want to make sure that we have, I think, multiple methods of approaching public education so that we can incorporate the different desires and the different family situations. And so you'll see conversations on neighborhood schools that should be funded at a certain level, the conversations on charter schools. Our charter schools, in a research piece that came out in November by Harvard, shows our charter school system in Alaska is performing better than any other charter school system in the country. That, to me, is a cause for celebration. Some people are concerned if we expand that system that some negative things will happen. I'm not convinced about that. I think the more opportunities you give kids, the better off we are. But charter schools, now with this decision by the Superior Court judge on homeschools and how money goes or where money goes to private and or religious vendors that help underwrite that public education. These are the three big topics: funding, charter schools, and right now homeschools because of the decision.
Gosh, now I want to circle back to that actual charter school study results, because I've been finding the conversation on the very interesting, because some folks are like, hey, I'm not quite sure about that study, or I have some concerns about it. So maybe talk to me about where some of those concerns that you've heard from people about that study, or maybe sort of retorts to that, because people would be like, hey, because there's the misunderstanding that charter schools aren't part of the public school system, because they are, but I think it just comes from the presentation of charter schools a lot of the time.
A misunderstanding. Some of this stuff is complex. But our charter schools in the state of Alaska are not private charter schools. They are public schools. They are literally public schools that happen to have a mission and have parents coalescing around that mission, and you have parent groups that help guide the mission and guide the policy. So they are public schools, public school teachers. These are public school kids. Regarding the study, it's the only study that's been done that really demonstrates nationwide how charter schools are performing. There's lots of studies that talk about how charter schools are set up, how much money they should get, et cetera, et cetera. There's lots of studies on the inputs. This is really one of the only studies on the outputs that we have. So, I mean, I've heard people disagree with it. And for example, we may be talking about this poll. If you're an individual that has an agenda and that you are stuck in that agenda, you may not want to hear that. For example, that charter schools are performing well in Alaska. You may not want to hear that there are poll numbers, especially from the public, that show a different narrative than maybe that the individual was seeking. So there really were two studies. One back in about, I think, in 2004 by a researcher named Huxby, who also looked at Alaska. And at that time in 2004, our charter schools, generally speaking, were performing better than our neighborhood schools. Then this research piece came out in November. I was unaware of it until it was sent to me when it came out in November, that showed Alaska's charter schools on the outputs using the NAEP scores, tests that are given to fourth and eighth graders nationwide, showed that our kids are performing better than any other charter school system in the country. And so I believe that's a cause for celebration. Some people don't believe the research, but there's no research right now that refutes that research. There's only opinions or questions on how that research was done.
Gotcha. I think some of the, maybe why that conversation was happening is when you compare those results that were found with the NAEP study for the charter schools, then you look at some of the rest of the public school system, and there's a pretty stark contrast. Some of our other public schools perform very, very low compared to some of our neighboring states and other areas of the country. So maybe can I get your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you look at individual schools, just like you do with individual kids, there are going to be some schools that perform in Alaska really, really well. I mean, we'll have some public schools in Alaska that I think many would agree perform at or even better than most schools in the country. We do have a number of schools that are performing poorly when you look at test scores, assessment scores, whether it's the MAP test that's used or other assessments. The general consensus is that, generally speaking, our neighborhood school system, and those are public schools. When I say neighborhood schools, those are the schools that most of us went to. You either got on a bus, you walked, you went to a classroom, are not performing as well as we had hoped. And so we're all trying to work on that. I mean, regardless of what side you're on homeschools or charter schools, we all want our neighborhood schools to perform better, but some of them are not. Now, with that said, what the charter school study also shows you is that not all charter schools perform well. So it's a situation where I think certainly the examination of this research warrants a closer look. But I would generally say I think most people would not be surprised that our charter schools are performing well. I think a lot of us are surprised that they were the best in the country. But we do have work to do with our neighborhood schools. We do have work to do with all of our public school approaches. And so I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's a place for dialogue. But again, if folks are going to be entrenched in their camps, it's difficult to have a dialogue that moves things forward.
Now, on that front of, you know, working on our neighborhood schools, part of that poll was looking at really like what reforms need to be made for education. And I think some of the results from that were quite interesting. Namely, about 77% of those polled in that study asked, you know, hey, wanted the increase in BSA funding. But I also know that you've expressed before that you are against going for the BSA increase.
No, I'm not. That's not true. I am for putting more money into education. The issue was, do we just put more money in, lock it into statute, and never have a discussion about performance or outcomes or approaches to education? I've been clear on that. I would just suggest that folks check the record, check the press conferences. The question is, do we just talk about money and then that's it? Because the history in Alaska has been, that's usually the discussion about education. Charter schools were not embraced when that concept came to Alaska. I know that. I saw it personally. I was a superintendent. I was a principal when early on when charter schools came to Alaska. And at first, it was met with a lot of pushback from the educational establishment. The same thing with homeschools when that came into being in the 90s. Now, we've had correspondence schools since before statehood, territorial days. And that makes sense when everyone thinks about the size of Alaska, people at remote camps, remote living, et cetera, et cetera. But no, I've said it consistently. We have an inflationary period that we're enduring right now in which you do need more resources in education. I'm just not sure that a money-only approach is going to improve the outcomes or improve the vehicles, the ability for kids to go to homeschools, charter schools, et cetera. So that's the discussion right now.
Gotcha. And I will admit, Governor, that was a Columbo question, as I know what the record is, but I know sometimes you got to ask a question.
I like Columbo. I like that. You watched Columbo? You watched the reruns?
I have watched a lot of Columbo.
Okay. Peter Falk.
And so, and to kind of build off of that, and so I think it is also worth noting that that study did show that, you know, majority of people do want substantial education reforms and not just a funding.
When you say study, you're referring to the poll.
Yes.
Yeah, it's important to differentiate that. So the poll, that's correct. Yes.
And so, maybe give me an example of maybe some of my reform ideas that you might have or how we could try and tackle that.
There's wait lists in our charter schools right now. In other words, there are folks that want to send their kids to charter schools, but there's not enough room. I'm suggesting that we expand the ability for people to send their kids to charter schools. And the one suggestion I had was the Department of Education also be a charter authorizer. So right now it's just the school districts, the school boards, the school districts that authorize charter schools in the state of Alaska. We want to be able to make sure that any kid that wants to go to charter school can go to a charter school. And so I have suggested as part of the discussion on a comprehensive package in education that let's let the Department of Education's school board be an authorizer as well. Those that represent, quote, school districts are opposed to that. And I was surprised at the opposition to that because I had thought that getting more funding into education would have been a priority for some of these groups. And they'll tell you that it is, but what I've been told is that the expansion of charter schools and having the Department of Education be part of the authorizing process in terms of being a primary authorizer as well is a non-starter for these groups. So they're adamant that's not going to happen. And so people in the legislature that are in conversation with these groups are not supporting an expansion of charter schools by the Department of Education.
Governor, my next question I really had for you is I want to circle back to this issue that's come up with the correspondence schools. So maybe for the listeners, kind of refresh them on what this conversation has been around the recent court decisions about the correspondence schools.
Sure. So what the Superior Court, it's not 100% clear, but I'll do my best. What the Superior Court ruled here recently was that our allotment process, so when a child goes to a public, these are public, just like charter schools, we're talking about public homeschooling, not private homeschooling, public homeschooling, public teacher, public student, public money, public individual learning plan, what we call an ILP, and a public outcome. They get a public diploma from the state of Alaska. In order for them to underwrite and help with the child's education, the state of Alaska uses vendors, private vendors, and some of those private vendors are also religious vendors. And what would happen, for example, Jordan, if you were a homeschool student, you would sit down with your homeschool teacher, you would set up your classes. And some of those classes might be you're taking a class at UAF, you're taking a welding class, you're taking an English class from a tutor, you're taking a math class from a tutor, you're taking a dance elective from a dance studio. Those private vendors I just mentioned, they are able to get money from your state allotment to help underwrite that education so you get a public education. Some of those vendors that are recognized are also religious vendors, meaning if you wanted to take a Latin course and Monroe Catholic was an accepted vendor, you would be able to use the public money to buy that course from Monroe Catholic to underwrite your public education. What some of the opponents of homeschooling and this approach to homeschooling are stating is that that money is a direct benefit to those private and or religious vendors. The premise that we make is that it's indirect. It's incidental to the child's education. In other words, we're not paying money to, I'm using this example for Monroe Catholic. So giving money directly to Monroe Catholic for the purpose of underwriting Monroe Catholic. It's giving money to the allotment process so that a course can be purchased from a religious vendor, just like a course can be purchased or services purchased from a private vendor. Suit was filed that was illegal or unconstitutional, I should say. The Superior Court came out and ruled that that wasn't just unconstitutional, but in essence, and again, we're still working through this, it appears that the decision vacated all of our charter school and homeschool laws. So in other words, if it were to stand, the laws themselves would be off the books. So you might not have homeschools because of the laws being stricken down. Now, we've asked for a stay, which means we've asked that decision not be implemented until we get this figured out. And we are asking for an expedited hearing with the Alaska Supreme Court so they can take a look at this. But obviously, 24,000 students in the state of Alaska, 1,000-plus vendors, hundreds of teachers, dozens of school districts would be negatively impacted. As a matter of fact, if this decision were to stand, many consider this, including myself, that this would be the biggest a shock to the educational system in the state's history.
And I can definitely see why that would be the issue. I mean, you're talking about options that, you know, are being presented because you can only get them through specific vendors. And then if the impression is that, oh, because I'm paying this vendor a certain amount of money, I'm then helping this vendor, it would cause a lot of issues.
Right. That's not the purpose. So in other states, for example, in Indiana, where they have a voucher system, what happens there is the money goes directly from the state treasury directly to the school to underwrite the education of a child that wants to go there. The child that goes there is getting a private education. So in Indiana, apparently that's constitutional. In Alaska, our constitution would prohibit that because you cannot have direct payments, direct money is going to religious and or private educational institutions. In Alaska, with the homeschool process, again, all of our kids are public educated students. And what's interesting about our approach, unlike any other approach in the country, we've actually had many, many, quote, private schoolers, many, many kids going to religious schools come into the public system. In other words, they've signed up now to become public school students. So they get a public education. Where in the example I gave on Indiana, those kids are leaving the public school system and going and become private schoolers. In Alaska, it's the opposite. So really, this model is broadening the reach and the ability for all kids to get a public education. 24,000 kids, and people need to understand this. There's 24,000 kids in this program. And therefore, there's really 24,000 reasons why each individual kid and their families attend these programs. Some of the kids have health issues. Some of the kids may be engaged in activities that going to a neighborhood school would impact their ability to engage in these activities, whether they're really good skiers, really good ice skaters, motocross, equestrian folks, athletics, other activities. Others are in there for health reasons. Others are in there for family reasons. Their parents travel a lot. The job takes the parents out of the state of Alaska. They live remotely. There's 24,000 reasons for this. And here's what I think people need to understand. If this whole thing is thrown out, if the expectation is those 24,000 kids are just going to tomorrow morning go to the neighborhood schools, it's not going to happen. Not only is it not going to happen, it couldn't happen. Because the schools wouldn't be able to gear up fast enough to deal with these kids. But it won't happen because if that's the case, they'd be going there now.
And I think all this kind of combines into really what one of my key questions today is why do you think we are seeing this trend of folks, you know, shifting towards, you know, homeschools or charter school programs, these sort of they're like education options. Why do you think we are seeing that trend? And I ask you that partly because I know you have a history in education.
Yeah, that's a great question. That is a very good question. So I would say, remember what the history of public education is in the United States. Prior to, the 1900s, education was most often done by religious schools. And so when you look at the Gutenberg Press, printed the Bibles in Germany, so that people could read the Bibles. Schools sprung up, religious schools sprung up, to teach kids how to read, specifically the Bible. Well, what happened in the United States is when you started to get an influx of immigrants from Europe, late 1800s into the 1900s, you had a lot of people coming to America that had a different culture, different language, different values. And part of what the school system did back then was help make everyone become an American, learn how to speak English, learn how to respect the country, learn how to understand the values. And back then, most folks, they were either in farming communities or they were in cities. And so you could easily attend a neighborhood school. There were many, many neighborhood schools. The population of the country was growing. There was a lot of young people, a lot of large families. Over time, what's happened with technology, transportation, other methods of doing work, you have more of an approach to mobility, the ability to travel with your kids, the ability to live remotely with your kids. And for some folks, they just want to focus on the academics. You know, some folks will say that many of our public schools have become propaganda centers, indoctrination centers, and that's probably true in cases. It's not always true, obviously. I mean, my kids went to public school. But again, I think what's happened is a lot of folks just want to get back to reading, writing, and math. A lot of folks have family reasons, individual reasons, and now that they have the flexibility. And so I guess what I'm saying is there was a change in the, quote, market demand and how education was delivered, and more people are taking advantage of it. I also think during COVID, when schools shut down, if you look nationally, you'll see a spike in folks going to alternative forms of education because of the closure of those schools. So I think it's a whole host of reasons why, but I think freedom is a big part of it.
I think a big part of it, pulling off of what you've mentioned, is sort of that cultural aspect of people have these concerns about what public schools are doing. And it raises, I think, and it kind of extends to a conversation you and I were having before the show of an increased polarization when you don't feel as though you can trust the institutions that you have around you, that leads to more of these sort of situations cropping up.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's right. We did have that conversation, and you're right. And you know, we talked about it. It's not just the institution of education, the public education. It's institutions across the board. I mean, you're seeing shifts in people attending church. You're seeing more of people retreating within themselves in terms of dialogue. Some would say, factionalizing of the country. The country is great because of our diversity, but it's also great because of our common understanding and acceptance of certain core values that make us Americans: tolerance, freedom. The list goes on and on. And I think the discourse over time here in the last few years has gotten pretty um, pretty heated, I would say, at the very least. And so I think what you got is a combination of factors. You also have the other problem you have with our schooling system across the country is you have a demographic change. People are simply having less kids. So our population is aging. Native Americans, meaning those that are born in America, are having less and less children. And so your population, your school populations are dropping. Expenses aren't dropping, but the populations are. And so there's across the country, if you look at the discussions on school funding and attendance and so forth, we're in a state of flux. I don't see that changing unless people turn around and start having more and more children. I don't see that changing. So I think with that, I also think with AI and other technological advances, I think you're going to see a shakeup in the system. It's just what's happening. I think it's going to continue.
And I think you have a point there where you said you don't really see that changing, you know, the populations in the schools. And I would argue there is a lot to that. There is a lot of external factors that are causing folks, especially folks within my generation or, you know, even a bit older, to just not want kids because it's not largely, in this case, economically feasible is the large component there. And so then it's like, well, if it's not economically feasible for me to even live, I don't view it as ethical or even the moral thing to even have more kids because then you're putting them in a potentially worse situation. So I think that's largely where that can stem from. And your concerns about AI, you know, that's also a big one coming up here. I'm very adamant about making sure AI doesn't happen in the newsroom as long as I am in charge of it. And it will continue to remain that way as long as I'm in charge of the newsroom. But that is another, as you said, is going to be a big thing moving forward.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to fight AI. I'm just being honest with you. You know, there's a term called Luddites. It comes out of England when the Industrial Revolution took place. And instead of the guild process where people learned how to make shoes by hand and learned how to make linens by hand, you start to see machines doing the work of hundreds of people. And they had hoped that that wouldn't happen either because it was would throw people out of work. I got to tell you, we all should be concerned. And we all should be looking at what is this going to look like because AI is going to infiltrate everything. It's just the way it is. ChatGPT, people are using that now for almost everything. And so you're going to see some incredible changes in this country, whether it's embraced or not. And the technology is going to be the leader on this. And so this is going to be a dynamic period of time in this world's history. And we all have a front seat to it.
Yeah, I think on that note, I think that people are feeling the same way about AI right now as they did 100 years ago about automation in general. Right. And there's nothing we can do to stop it.
I was in
a
city just a couple weeks ago, and there was a car driving, and there was nobody in it.
That's scary.
There are folks that predict that you're 24 years old, you're a young man, that if you do have children, they will never own a car, that everything will be on an app. There won't be any garages. There'll be no need for them to change the oil. I mean, it's got a whole different world happening very quickly.
And at this rate, they may not be able to afford a car.
Right.
So. Well, most of us already joke we can't afford a house. So.
This is true.
That plays a role, too. But looking at our clock here, we are about out of time. Governor, thank you very much for taking the time to come in today. I really much appreciate it. I'm sure the listeners appreciate it as well.
Yeah, very important topics. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Both of you, thank you, Jordan. Thank you, Governor Dunleavy. Good to hear from both of you. And we hope you have a fantastic week. Enjoy this beautiful weather.
I will. Thank you.
There you go. That's Governor Dunleavy here on KINY.